everyone, this is Matt, and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better, not perfect nutrition and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today we're excited, another amazing guest on the show, Elizabeth Nardi. She's CEO of Organically Grown Company, an organization that has powerfully grown the organic movement for over 50 years. Today, she sits down with Robin and Ashley to share her greatest motivator. Wait to hear about this one. And what steps an organization can take to protect both values and shareholder return. I like that. It shouldn't all be about the shareholders making money. You know, you've got to have values. That's what I look for in companies when they look out for the buyers and they look out for the shareholders. So excited to hear about this one. Know it's going to be a great podcast. So without further ado, over to you, ladies.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for taking time to grab takeout with us today. This is another fantastic conversation, well in the waiting. I think Robin and I are just so excited to talk to our guest today. And part of it is that, you know, the more that we are out there learning about whether it's the health, our individual health, the health of others, the health of farmers, the health of the soil, keeps coming back to one area, and that is without any doubt, it is great for people to be eating produce. But in order for us to get more produce, there's a lot of things, and quality produce, organic produce, there are a lot of things that need to come together. And for the last 4 years, I've been fortunate enough to be involved with the Organic Produce Network. I have learned so much. You know, this organization that is dedicated to connecting and really creating a network of, you know, everybody from the farmers to the marketers to the retailers, doing so much work and meaningful work. And we get the fruits and vegetables of their labor every day. So we could not be more grateful to them for sponsoring today's podcast. And Robin, just wanted to say hi. And I know you're super excited about this one too.
You know, I am. I mean, I appreciate the pioneers of these conferences for the organic industry, but some of them have become absolutely massive. And I think the intimacy around some of these conversations and the nuances, the expertise, are critical right now, because we are literally defining this next generation for organic. And we've had these pioneers that were the first generation of organic leadership, but we're now moving into the second generation of organic leadership. And our guest today so much embodies that on every level. I love that she has been doing this for quite some time. I love the model that the company that she works with has created. And I think it's really time to sort of get a little bit creative here and think about how we can do things differently. Think about how we can sort of start to specialize and innovate and create these opportunities to have these really important, vibrant dialogues, and recognize that sometimes that dialogue can be just simply between the organic produce, you know, the people that are actually producing these crops, and then the retailers, the people that are buying these crops. And I think, you know, so much has changed in the last 7 years. It was really when Kroger decided to launch its Simple Truth organic line that it changed the industry. They went from zero to $1 billion in revenue in a 2-year period. And all of a sudden, these big CPG companies that were sitting there trying to make excuses for why they weren't going to go free from and weren't going to go organic, Kroger just took off and they said, we're going to do it. We're going to do it with a private label brand. And then sure enough, these other retailers all started to follow. And what people forget, I mean, so often I'll speak to teams and be like, you know, you've got to recognize the power of these private label brands. And what people forget is how powerful they are, not only facing the consumer, but back towards these producers and these farmers. And you think about how much they're purchasing, how much these farmers and producers are providing into brands like Costco and Kroger and Safeway and Publix and Harris Teeter. And so, you know, I think to step back and say, how can we enhance this conversation? How do we get rid of these middlemen? So that there are smarter economics, smarter fund flows, the farmers can be more directly rewarded. And that's such an important conversation. So I'm so excited about our guest today.
Amen.
Thank you.
So we just want to introduce her, Elizabeth Nardi. Welcome. Thank you so much for the work that you do. And we're going to dive into that. But I thought maybe we could start off with like your first experience with organic produce, like how you met an organic, whatever your first experience was, and really what ignited your passion for what you're doing today.
Oh my gosh, that's such a great question. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Ashley, for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here today. Great question. You know, it's actually funny. My earliest memories of produce date back to being 4 and 5 years old at a place called Drumlin Farm, which was an Audubon Society farm right outside of Boston, Massachusetts, where I was born. And I went to kind of a summer camp, day camp there. And I remember picking beans and beets and making vegetable soup with the fresh organic vegetables from the garden. And I still, you know, can actually taste that as I talk about it. And we churned our own butter. We milked the cow. And just being in the roots of Vermont and Massachusetts, being close to agriculture production, growing up down the street from a dairy farm, going to University of Vermont, studying agriculture and holistic veterinary medicine there, was very embedded kind of from a young age, the deep, deep appreciation for small and mid-sized producers.
Wow, you're so lucky. I'm sitting here thinking about growing up in Houston, and I did not have that kind of exposure until we moved to Boulder. And again, I think for people that have had that exposure early on, to be in a place like you are to lead organizations like the Organically Grown Company, it's not coincidental, and it makes so much sense given that kind of exposure. You know, the thing that fascinates me is that you hear a lot about all these middlemen and all these transactions and what's happening to the American farmer. The statistics are pretty jaw-dropping and heartbreaking. And as you layer on kind of this disruption that we're starting to see with weather, whether it's droughts or whether it's the floods that have just hit Nebraska, the sort of economic livelihood of farmers is suffering tremendously. The median farm income, I think, in the U.S. was something like -$1,548. And then on top of that, you know, there are these opioid epidemics that we'll read about or suicide epidemics. And I would love if you could, and I was just telling Ashley before we got going, if you had to describe to a third grade classroom what a perpetual purpose trust-owned company is, I'm wondering if you could do that.
Fantastic question. And as the daughter of a third grade teacher, I should be able to do that pretty effectively. Yeah, I'm the daughter of two teachers. So I love learning and was fortunate enough to land at Organically Grown during a real pivotal point in our company's history. So we had four ownership structures over time. We were started as a nonprofit and then moved into a co-op model. We were started by growers in the field and in Oregon. If you can picture this, if you're a third grader thinking about going to the back of a retail store and one person's growing tomatoes and one person's growing eggplant, one person's growing lettuce and basil, and how rich and vibrant that community can be when a distribution company comes together to support a network of small and local producers. And so fast forward to today, we were looking at our 40th year in business and looking at the next 40 years and what is most important to our staff and to our grower founders and to those folks who really had a vision for the future of the world. What did we want to hold on to most as a company? And we spent actually quite a while unpacking this and talking it through with folks. And at the end of the day, we came down to the things that were most important to us was stay true to our mission and our purpose, to support small and mid-sized agriculture in this day and age. You said it very well. We're at a pivotal point in the industry overall. We need to double down on supporting the independents and supporting community agriculture and supporting diversity. And we created the Sustainable Food and Ag Perpetual Purpose Trust to do just that. And what we've done in that model is we've brought together the stakeholders that are most important to our business, our staff, our growers, our customers, our community, and mission-aligned investors. And Robin, you've used this phrase, and we love it. It's our phrase too. You can't fix a broken food system with a broken finance system. And we truly believe that when you put together people who believe in the same thing for the future, you can create it. And that's why we've created the trust. We've created the trust to hold our business into perpetuity, to hold our shares true to our mission so that they cannot be sold. And it really changes the paradigm of a company when you're focused not just on maximizing shareholder value, but when you're focused on maximizing mission and purpose.
That's like one of the most incredible things. I just had like all these ripple shivers. So thank you, because I think that I think too much right now is being that's too often like the excuse or the cop out. You know, it's kind of like what I say to parents who say they have to have all these junky foods in their house because their kids might want these snacks, you know, and I'm like, you know, let's think about both what you're eating and also what the long term piece is and like how can you upgrade it. I think the challenge that that I see in that system is you locking in the finances, and nobody's going to argue with you about the support and wanting to support. I should say, not nobody, but many of us and most of us that are listening are saying we want to support the independent, we want to support the small farmer. But we also kind of feel like we want, you know, so Robin grew up in Texas. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. It was all fast food. We are seeing some really cool fast food here where they're scaling, you know, bringing in organic produce. But I think I hate to use the word average consumer because I think it's like a dumbing down and it's unfair. But I think the well-intentioned consumer doesn't necessarily understand how to purchase in a manner that supports the independents and supports. So can you walk us through what like your dream vision of that, you know, as you're accomplishing all that you're accomplishing, what that would look like and what it looks like for the consumer?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we're up here in the Pacific Northwest and bring produce up from through California and through states south of that and west of that, right? So So we are an interesting model in that we're kind of right in the heart of agriculture. And I completely understand it. Growing up in Boston, my husband's from Ohio. There's certainly different access to small and mid-sized product. I would say, you know, more than anything, what we see with millennials and just in general, also, you know, back to our founding growers and the era that they lived in the 60s, right? Taking the time to understand where your food comes from is paramount. So being able to do research when you can, but also we as a B2B business primarily, we have the responsibility to provide our customers with good information and good choices. And that's what we strive to do every day. We strive to say, here's great lettuce and it's available from a grower who grows on 1 acre. And here's why you should support this person. And they're just getting started up. Or it might be a larger farm that is something that is really special, but people don't necessarily understand that. And so I think really, you know, you talked a lot about Kroger and Costco and others, and there are quite a few large companies that are getting more solidified into in supporting organic. There's also quite a few independents still out there. There's an incredible co-op network across the country, and those kind of the blend of the two are so important to be able to provide consumers choice and provide consumers good education about what products they're buying and why they should support those that might be grown closer to home.
You know, as I listen to you, I mean, I think that there are a lot of opportunities to rethink the way we distribute food. And one of the talking points is, oh, we need all this food to feed the world, when we're realizing the USDA, the United Nations both report that we throw away something like 30 to 40% of the food that we produce. And you would be seeing that firsthand and also be a solution to tackling that. You know, we've seen these initiatives like the Ugly Produce Network and different ways that people are able to sort of rethink food. And I think on the distribution front, that's the opportunity, is that if we're throwing away 30 to 40% of the food that we produce, it's not necessarily a production problem, it's a distribution problem. And I would love for you to speak to both the opportunities and the challenges that you guys have seen in trying to expand that distribution. I mean, I would think that there'd be plenty of farmers who know exactly who you are, that more of the challenges and the capital needs and things would be for the reach and for the further distribution and expansion.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. So well said. Distribution is indeed, you know, the crux of it all, right? Especially in a day and age when we have increasing gas prices, increasing labor shortage within the distribution and trucking industry. Really, really important to think about building scalable models and hub and spoke type networks. So you have not necessarily always the large trucks running the routes. You want to look at really small scale distribution and opportunities to fill the truck to best capacity both directions. You know, I think there's some really interesting models being developed out there, thinking about how can you utilize the trucks already on the road, particularly the growers who might be already moving from place to place, or regional distributors like OGC, who can actually really leverage our capacity, leverage our relationships, leverage our abilities to really create local sourcing networks. And I do think that in this day and age of consolidation, that's really much of the wave of the future is probably a divergence of paths, right? So that I use Amazon. I'm a member, of course, so like so much of America. But at the same time, I try to support local and independent, and creating, you know, again, the systems for education and of the consumer is going to be critically important so that they can vote with their dollars and continue to vote for local, regional, community-based agriculture when and where they can.
Yeah, I think you were just mentioning Amazon. And one of the things that I think is really exciting is like some of my favorite new, as I'm newly back in the Midwest, some of my favorite new local products I'm able to get through Amazon. Whereas like when I walk into some of the retailers that historically had a better display of local products, they're moving into more of the private label, bigger, you know, so I think it's just really interesting to sort of watch that shake out. You know, one of the things that I started off the conversation around Organic Produce Network. My first year there, before they had the Organic Growers Summit, there were a lot of farmers that were there. And, you know, I think about, you know, I've learned a lot over the years about the experience of the farmer and the health of the farmer and all of the everyone that's involved in the growing, both here in the U.S. and around the world in terms of organic, but nowhere near what you and Robin know. But, you know, when I'm buying organic, one of the reasons I feel better about it is because I feel like I'm serving my health goals, but it's also supporting the health goals of others and not in conflict with them. But I think that a lot of that, in order for that to be successful and scalable, a lot of that has to do with policies, either the policies of the company around how they take care of their farmers and growers, or at the policies at the state and the local level. And so I guess I'm just curious what you guys have been able to do that you think is a must for if somebody was trying to replicate your model and that other companies could look at that support the full health of the farmer and the grower in terms of on maybe on more of the policy side or on the business structure side.
Yeah, for sure. I'll answer that question in two ways. In terms of the perpetual purpose trust that we created, we actually were very proud that last month Governor Kate Brown signed into law a bill that enables our purpose trust to actually exist in the state of Oregon. Previously, we had to be domiciled in Delaware. It's a really new model. The perpetual purpose trust has been utilized in Europe and looked at in other ways, but it actually has not been used to the best of our knowledge in the United States previously to actually hold the shares of a company. So we had to suggest some legislative changes to make that possible. And again, that was signed into law last month, which is super exciting. The trust itself is designed to hold multiple companies underneath it. And we are hoping that is inspirational to others. We've actually been contacted by dozens of companies facing either succession planning or companies just getting started thinking about keeping the end in mind as they begin, which is not something that every entrepreneur does. It's really hard to do, to think about the end as you begin your company. But thinking about if you're starting your company with a goal of existing into perpetuity, holding true to a mission, what governance structure is going to allow you to do that? And we think there's a lot of forms of steward ownership, again, that are utilized in Europe that are going to really, we're going to see a lot more in the coming years in the United States. And it's really exciting because it'll provide additional options, again, for independent, smaller producers to stay viable and stay true to their founding roots. And then in terms of organics, you know, we actually had some major wins in this last farm bill. I remember back in 2002 when I was working for Senator Leahy and working on the farm bill, and when the National Organic Program was first going into effect, we were negotiating the organic provisions, and I brought in a basket of organic food for all the staffers to eat. And it was a Saturday, and we were on the House of Representatives side, and everyone was starving, and folks said, "What is this?" And I thought, oh my goodness, it's 2002. Hasn't everyone heard of organic? But, you know, back then I went to Safeway and I bought a couple of the organic produce items that existed in a very small section of the department. And then I went to the 4-foot set of organic product that was in the store. And I think I found Newman's Own Oreos and Newman's Own pretzels and a couple other items. And brought those in, and people said, "Well, I've never tried organic. This is so interesting." And so, to think about how it's expanded is just tremendous. And we saw some really, really significant wins in this farm bill, both for support of the National Organic Program, but also for research, which I think is going to be critical to organic as we move forward, to continue to apply research dollars to provide, again, additional viable options for the industry in terms of pest control, in terms of soil health, and in terms of diversification and growth.
You know, as I listen to you, one of the things that you touched on are the different models that are in different countries, in Europe in particular. And, you know, we are so known for this model that we've built, which holds so much of our capital through Wall Street and through these publicly traded companies. And I too, like you, and I'm sure you're hearing from the companies that I'm hearing about, have heard of these companies that are really exploring these different models of ownership and different models like the Perpetual Purpose Trust, so that they can maintain control and the integrity of the mission and have mission-aligned capital participating, so that, you know, it's not just everything's being driven for these short-term decisions, that, you know, they're mindful of what's happening in a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, a generation from now. And I think the food industry has an opportunity to really lead with that, to really say, look, you know, this extractive model is not working for us. We cannot convert the food system on quarterly earnings. So I'm thrilled you guys are out there, Elizabeth. And it sounds like you've been so ahead of the curve, but also you've been doing the homework consistently as a leader now at OGC. And I just wanted to say thanks for that.
Thank you. That means the world. It's an incredible team here. We've had we talk a lot about ripeness, which is kind of ironic phrase to be in the produce industry and use that phrase. But this really was a multiple year journey from all of our founders getting engaged and involved, staff, coworkers, folks who were really passionate about what we do and wanting to set ourselves up for success for the next 40 years. And we came to a point where we found the right legal team and the right, as you said, mission-aligned investors and the right thinkers. And, you know, I remember being at Expo West. We went 3 years in a row. And the first year we were in the last, I think, room at the Best Western with bunk beds in it, talking with one person about this. And the next year we were talking with 12 about this. And then last year there was a packed room of 65 companies and investors and other folks interested in learning more. And I do, I really appreciate your recognition, and we are eager to continue the conversation with other companies, and hopefully hope to provide inspiration and tools and resources if we can as well.
I just get so excited when I hear you, because I'm like, you know, we need the work and but also a reminder of the wins, and just how you've been framing this just feels, I just get such a great energy. So yes, just to echo Robin, I just want to say thank you on that part. And I have the privilege of shifting gears a little bit from sort of what's been more of a topical conversation around you and your business setting and how your business is running into you, the person, and some of the learnings that you've taken, that you've gathered on this path and some of the stuff moving forward. So we have our rapid fire round of questions. I wanted to kick it off with, what is the greatest obstacle that you personally have overcome?
So, this is an interesting one. And I think this actually goes back to a comment you made earlier on, which is women leadership, right? And so I think, you know, one of the things that I have been most focused on in my career is balancing my work and my home, like so many of us, right? I have two beautiful sons, Quinn, age 7, Everett, age 10, and try to really inspire them to be learners and appreciate the world around them. And creating that work-life success is super challenging every day. I think in terms of what I've overcome with them, when my youngest was 16 months, he went through a crazy medical event, which he went through liver failure. And it was one of those moments where I woke up and he had the tummy flu, and you thought, gosh, I really need to go to work today, but I need to stay home with my kid. And we ended up at the hospital and 12 days in the pediatric intensive care unit, 400 tests, no idea what was wrong with him. Until they figured out it was influenza, and it was a really rare reaction to influenza. And at the end of a week where he was on dialysis and we were on the life flight list for a liver transplant, at the end of the week, he turned it around and it was just amazing to be a leader who generally is so focused on data and analytics and creating plans and prioritization. And you're in that situation where you've kind of lost all, you don't have the information, you give it to everybody else around you and you have to get information from them. But he had an amazing team of 17 professionals helping to save his life. And they said, you know, at the end of the week, they said that was a miracle. I didn't think he was going to survive, but he did, and he's thriving to this day. And it, for me, just put everything in a different perspective, right? And the choices you make and the choices you support others in making, you know, put family first. And you never know when things can change. And thankfully, we didn't have a change moment, but it was a good reminder to just love those around you all the time.
Oh, okay. It makes me so happy. I sit here and I'm like, it's the believe in miracles. You know, I think we have to, at the end of the day, like, as you were just saying, like, we can be thinking about the science or focused on the data or the need for more research, and just that ability to trust in the miracles. We are thrilled, that, he is, as you said, thriving. And I really, that is, that's a powerful story. So thank you for sharing his journey as well. I think along the way, when you were talking about your parents, I heard a bit of, you know, both of them, how funny was it that Robin brought up, like, you know, third grade, and then it turns out that the third grade teacher is your parent. But I heard a bit there. And then I also think, as you were just sharing this, story and this, what you and your family went through, that there's got to be at least someone, if not several someones, that really inspired you and that have helped you, you know, in those moments, been able to go on your journey in the way that is the Elizabeth journey. So I'm curious if just one came to mind, who would it be that inspires you and why?
You know, it's interesting. I think so hard about this question, and there are, you know, so many that come to mind. Dalai Lama, Vandana Shiva, two that are just completely top of mind. But honestly, where I get my juice and my real energy from is being with the producers and those that are out in the field every day, or those who have created some amazing company and are working, you know, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, nonstop, and taking on every risk and trying to create innovation in a new space. And, you know, I think about, like, when I get to sit down at a dinner table with somebody who makes something that I eat or a product I use, how exciting that is. Those are really my true heroes. And, you know, I'm honored to be, I've been in the food business all my life supporting those folks. But really, you know, when you're with somebody who actually has dedicated their life to creating something for others, that can be part of their daily diet, daily routine, most rewarding thing in the world for me.
Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense for you. I mean, it truly, truly, like, makes so much sense. So it's this whole cohort of innovators and creators and people that inspire us to move forward. I love that answer. And I'm with Ashley. I got choked up on your first answer too, Elizabeth. Okay, so this one, we're changing gears. Okay. What one message would you send to Congress?
What an interesting era to be asked that question in. it's funny, I worked for Senator Leahy back in 1999 through 2002, and then just went back to D.C. for the first time this past spring in a long time. And so it's interesting, I interned for Bernie, but you know, kind of regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, I also have deep respect for Senator Lugar and many others. You know, I feel like in this day and age, you got to lead with love, and you got to think about the next 40 years, the next 50 years. I feel like there's a lot of short-term decisions being made right now, and those are having major, major impacts, and we don't really understand the unintended consequences of the damage being done to human relationships and trade, it's just unbelievable, such disruption. And I think at the same time, you know, there's some great Confucius quote around disruption. When there's so much disruption, it's also really the opportunity for really powerful change. And I think we got to celebrate those moments. We, you know, in 2018, we saw over 125 women enter Congress, right, or be reelected to Congress. That's the most since 1992. It's pretty darn exciting. We saw the first Native American women in Congress, first Muslim women in Congress, and what I would just say, you know, it's almost more a message to those that aren't in Congress right now. If you're thinking about running, if you're thinking about speaking up and using your voice, do it, because the world needs you now more than ever before.
Yeah, totally, totally agree. So for all who are out there who are in the food space thinking about this, I will remind you that we only have one organic farmer in Congress, and obviously that's not enough. And to really change the farm bill and influence legislation in a meaningful way, the voices have to be fairly represented. And if 80% of households are buying something organic and 75% of categories in the grocery store have something organic, Congress needs to reflect that too. So I love that challenge. So the last question we have is, if you were a food, what would you be?
Well, I had to reach out for a lifeline in thinking about this one a little bit. And I checked in my 10-year-old. So I grew up taking him to the farmer's market every week. And every week we'd come home with 5 pounds of Romanesco, if we could find it, or broccoli if we couldn't. And I think Romanesco is one of those less celebrated vegetables. So I'm going to put it at the top for me. It's beautiful. It's chartreuse. It's, I think, the only vegetable that's actually fractal. It has beautiful spiky symmetry to it. Just gorgeous, really great flavor, kind of a cauliflower with a little bit nuttier flavor. Italian roots. My children grew up calling it dinosaur broccoli. And you just, you know, roast it with a little olive oil and salt, and it's perfect with so many foods. But it's definitely one of the most unique vegetables and lesser known, and I totally recommend, if you haven't tried it, to try it.
I'm pretty sure Ashley's going to chime in on this, because she is.
I mean, I was like, yes, 100,000%. Yes, I totally love that. What's your favorite way? Like, do you have or are you just any way you can get it in?
You know what? I just totally love roasted vegetables. Super simple and easy. You can just put a mix of anything on a tray and a little olive oil, salt, and pretty much everyone will eat it. I've never seen children eat so much kale as when it's prepared that way. But yeah, that's by far my favorite.
I was just going to say, I really do think that, and that is, to me, you could sum up the health benefits of the Mediterranean diet, which is like anyone will eat when olive oil and a little bit of salt are applied. You know what I mean? It just is.
Totally. Absolutely.
It just makes everything taste so much better. Thank goodness we're back in a space of salt being an acceptable option, especially in the vegetable space. So, wow. You know, Elizabeth, we're so grateful. I want to include in the hug here, the Organic Produce Network, because they brought us together, and we're super excited for if you happen to be able to be out and are one of the attendees. Robin, tell me a little bit. I'm trying to remember who all is attending. It's something like 700 retail. You'll go through the statistics.
It's a phenomenal list. And I think it speaks to, you know, really, really owning what you're good at. And that's what Matt and the team at the Organic Produce Network has done. They have pulled together 148 growers, shippers, and processors. And then they also have all of the top retailers coming. And I think it's just fascinating. I mean, because obviously there's this huge demand internally from these retailers to figure out private label stuff, figure out how they can expand their produce divisions as America is waking up to the fact that, hey, this actually makes a difference and you don't want to put fake food in a real body. So Matt shared that they just have like 15 category managers coming from Kroger, 8 from Costco, 7 from Walmart. I mean, just the numbers were astounding. And 1,100 people are supposed to be in attendance. And I'm just thrilled he's doing it. He's really owning this vertical and this specialty. And I think if anybody else is listening, if there is a vertical that you can own it and go for it. And this is only year 4 of this conference. And to me, it's just remarkable what he's put together.
Yeah, and they do the Organic Growers Summit in December, as well as have this newsletter. And Robin is way too humble to announce that she is actually keynoting. So I think a big part of why people are excited to come is that she is one of the keynotes for this event this year. And Elizabeth, we are just so thrilled that you guys are going to be there exhibiting again. I know that's been a highlight for me. I've had some conversations with some of your colleagues and just so grateful for the work that you're doing. And now that we've gotten to know you a little bit more on the personal side too, it just, as Robin said, it all makes so much sense. And we're excited. And your story about your son really took my breath away. And I think that also, I, I'm one, thank you for sharing it. But number two, it does just remind us that there's a bit of this that as much as we feel like we have to go searching always for the answers, let's believe in the miracles. And the miracle that I really want to believe in is that, you know, it just, we can see the continued growth of organic, but also that it really, the massive, massive involvement that it takes from the growers and the businesses and the organizations like yours and the commitments that you're making really becomes more of a standard moving forward than an exception. So that's my miracle. I'm going to believe it coming out of here.
So well said.
Thanks so much for making the time, Elizabeth. And we really look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you both. Look forward to seeing you in July.
Thanks, ladies. Thanks, Elizabeth. Great podcast as always. So many great thinkers out there, so much to discuss. Just need to get in front of the right people. And I know work is being done, changes are being made. And if we keep moving forward with this determination, with this courage, with this passion that people are showing, that the guests on our podcast are bringing, I just can't see why food industry and other industries aren't going to change for the best. The ball is rolling. We're at the forefront, and I just love hearing all these positive things coming out of these influencers and these powerful people, and I just love having them on our podcast. So let's keep on rolling. Let's keep on trying to make change. Let's keep on bringing the good out of people, and the results are going to shine. So until next time, I'll see you then.